Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, December 29th, 2020. I hope you all had a Merry Christmas, or I hope you had a happy holiday, whatever holiday you celebrate. The first headline reads, Best of 2020, News Gazette, Instagram. Picture this, and on the front page of the newspaper, there's a very large photo and a few smaller photos beneath it. And here are their captions. Our week-long look back begins with the photos that help tell our stories. None bigger than June's peaceful and purposeful Black Lives Matter March. That will be covered more on Top of the Morning, so stay tuned, and at newsgazette.com. There's also some other photos provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette and Jim Rosso of the News Gazette. So the largest one is the Black Lives March, where people were marching with signs. And then there's a few other ones, people hugging, people standing next to each other. And right, some more information will be on Instagram. The next headline reads, Restaurants versus Health District. Two more headed to court for violations. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. Local authorities are seeking temporary restraining orders against two local restaurants that are continuing to operate with suspended health permits. Hearings have been set for Thursday for temporary restraining orders filed by the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office against Lil Buford's, that's L-A-L, one word, Buford's, B-U-F-O-R-D, apostrophe S, at 102 North Long Street in Tolono, and by the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's attorney, Ruth Wyman, against Mary Ann's Diner at 1510 South Neal Street in Champaign. The health permits for both restaurants were suspended earlier this month after they continued to serve indoors in violation of a state order forbidding indoor service at bars and restaurants in an effort to control the spread of COVID-19. After the health district suspended Mary Ann's health permit, the city of Champaign also issued an emergency suspension of its food and beverage license. A negotiated settlement for Mary Ann's to regain both its city license and health permit was raised at a public hearing Tuesday and sent to the restaurant's attorney, Tom DeVore, D-E-V-O-R-E. But nearly a week later, there hasn't been any response, Wyman said. We cannot continue to wait for Mary Ann's Diner to decide whether and when they wish to comply with the law, she said. Meanwhile, Mary Ann's Diner posted on Facebook last week that it was open for carryout and delivery and would be open on Christmas Day. Allowing this restaurant to continue operating in violation of the law isn't fair to other restaurants that are complying with the rules, Wyman said. Thumbing your nose at the law is not appropriate, she said. The state's attorney's office has also filed ordinance violation cases against Jeff Buckler, owner of Lil Buford's, and Charles Buck of Billy Bob's, which is located at 105 East Broadway Street in Ogden, each for operating without a valid health permit. Lil Buford's permit was suspended December 17th, and Billy Bob's permit was suspended December 11th, also for continuing to serve indoors. Buck and Buckler were both scheduled to be arraigned January 21st. Meanwhile, another local restaurant that had its health permit suspended for indoor dining, Apple Dumplin', located at 2014 North High Cross Road in Urbana, was preparing to reopen for carryout service only at 11 a.m. today. Apple Dumplin' owners Jim and Catherine Flanagan agreed to a negotiated settlement brought to a court hearing last week. The agreement, in part, called for the restaurant to be reinspected and for the Flanagans to cease indoor dining service. Jim Flanagan said Monday that the restaurant has been reinspected and that he paid a $50 reinstatement fee and once again has a valid health permit. Jim Flanagan said he doesn't regret his legal battle with the health district over indoor dining, and he encouraged other restaurants to do the same. He contended that operators of most other restaurants agree with his position, but some are just scared to defy the restrictions. I'll go curbside, but I'm going to apply pressure any way I can, he said. I've got many irons in the fire. As of last week, public health officials in Champaign County had suspended 7 health permits at restaurants or bars this month in connection with indoor service. In addition to Apple Dumplin', only one other has been resolved, a suspension for Red Wheel, which is located at 741 Broad Meadow Road in Rantoul, lasted just a day after owners agreed to comply with the state order. Other establishments in Champaign County where health permits have been suspended include Not Too Far Bar at 203 Chapin Street in Ivesdale, and American Legion Post 71, which is located at 107 North Broadway Avenue in Urbana. The next headline reads, Arcola Pastor, Mission to Moscow, 15 years ministering in Russia, shaped Bud's pastorate. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Arcola. When Brent, B-R-E-N-T, Bud, B-U-D-D, moved to Moscow in 1992 to become a Christian missionary, it was cool to be from America. The man who has been pastor at First Christian Church in Arcola for the past 7.5 years never thought he would live anywhere else. Neither did his wife, Alina, whom he met there. We had an agreement that we would never leave. Originally, he didn't want to marry a Russian, and I didn't want to marry an American, she said. Bud said he was wary that any Russian woman who showed interest in him was only doing so because she wanted to move to America. Alina, that's spelled A-L-I-N-A, was skittish about marrying an American because she thought he might take her away from her native land. Most Russians were friendly to Americans when Bud ventured over to that country. He decided to move there after realizing there were many generations who didn't have a chance to learn about Jesus. After graduating with a college degree in psychology, he realized that's not what he wanted out of life. He had minored in Bible study. Bud was 26 when he opted to make the move. A native of Arcola, moving to a major metropolitan city was a big change, but I loved it, he said. Everybody wanted to be your friend and invite you over, Bud said. I felt like this is what it was like to be the most popular kid. At the same time, they would try to use you to get them things and get them to America. It was the early days after the fall of communism. Bud characterized it as a Wild West, anything goes sort of thing. Everything was in constant change. There wasn't much food on the shelves, so when you went grocery shopping, you bought what the stores had. Inflation was high, and most people, except for the Russian mafia, were poor. If someone wanted to open a store, they couldn't do it without somebody harassing them for protection money. Alina Bud remembers those days well. She grew up under communism. When I went to preschool, we were still being told that Vladimir Lenin was our grandpa, and we were his grandchildren, and we had to read tons of books about Lenin, she said. First through third graders were called the Children of October, after the Communist Revolution of October 1917. The collapse of the Soviet Union took place when she was 11, and it was a giant mess. Nobody knew it was happening, she said. It was difficult times for nearly everyone, including her parents. Her father, a respected nuclear physicist, had to get up early to unload trucks at the market in addition to doing his regular work. His mother, who worked at Moscow State University, also had to work selling things at the market in addition to her regular job. Alina said her parents were atheists. Her mother's family was Jewish. No one had much access to information about religion in the country. I was told it was a fairy tale, and that was the end, she said. Then I remember my dad brought a Bible home. It was a rare thing to buy. It was very precious. They told me never to touch it because it was a very precious book. In 10th grade, she attended a Christian high school. There's where I became a believer, she said. That's when my faith really became mine. She remembers when she first met her future husband. It was at a friend's birthday party. Brent appeared bored, and she wasn't impressed. I didn't think he was cool at all, she said, adding they knew each other for 4 years before they began dating. He was youth pastor at the Bible church she attended, Moscow Bible Church, and later became its pastor. Bud said most who attended were young people eager to learn. Their agreement to never leave Russia was fine for several years after their marriage before Brent said he started feeling a nudge from God that they should move to the U.S. But he was terrified to mention it to his wife. Little did he know, she was having the same feeling. It was a feeling that kept coming back, Alina said. It became stronger and stronger. Finally, Brent told her what he was thinking. She said he was absolutely shocked when she told him she was feeling the same way. He thought I was going to be hysterical. Even so, she said it was a hard, sad decision. They made the move in 2007. Two of their three children were born in Russia. When they moved to the U.S., Brent worked at a church in Pennsylvania for 6 years and went to seminary, where he earned a degree in theology. They moved from Russia before sentiment began to change against America under President Vladimir Putin. Brent said a sense of nationalism has taken over and the country doesn't need anything from the West. Alina, who works in the office of a Champaign insurance agency, said she is glad they moved. I think it was the right thing to do, she said. Brent said after the collapse of the Soviet Union, many people were interested in spiritual things because it was something brand new because they hadn't been exposed to it at all. Many became more open to the gospel. It was the first generation of a society where they could explore their faith, he said. Alina can verify that. She was one of those people. We were hungry. We didn't have any information, and all of a sudden we have a lot of information, she said. When you're told for dozens of years there is no God, and when you die you stop existing, and that's all there is to life, you serve the motherland, and that's it. But there's always this hunger inside that doesn't explain anything. Where does this whole universe come from? All these questions. She said her generation wanted to study the Bible and pray and bring their children up that way. Now that she's in America, she said many Christians take their freedom for granted. I was shocked to see how a lot of times Christianity is a nominal thing, because people have lived with it their whole life, she said. It's something they do on Sunday. They listen to the message, they like it, they believe it, and the rest of the week they do whatever they want. There's no accountability. Brent said living in Russia was awesome. I love living there. When I went in 1992, I didn't know how long it would be, he said. I fell in love with it. I thought I was going to live my whole life there. God kind of sent me in a different direction. I was kind of a reverse Jonah. I knew God was saying it was time to go. And there's a nice photograph at the bottom of this article, and the caption reads, Brent Budd, who spent 15 years as a Christian missionary in Moscow, poses in front of the Moscow River and buildings of the Kremlin. So he's sitting on a wall, and behind him is the Moscow River, and then to the very left is the Kremlin. And that's provided by the Budd family. The next headline reads, Illinois impact. Danville prison outbreak grows to 624 active cases among inmates. Staff, two deaths reported at Pyatt Nursing Home. A COVID-19 outbreak at the Danville Correctional Center continues to worsen, with the state on Monday reporting 571 active cases among inmates, up by 108 from Christmas Eve, and another 53 among staff, up by two. A woman in her 90s became the 34th Ford County resident to lose their life to COVID-19. The death was associated with an outbreak at Heritage Health in Gibson City, according to the Ford County Public Health Department. The Pyatt County Nursing Home reported its first two deaths of the pandemic, both last week. A total of 30 residents and 21 staffers have tested positive for COVID-19 during the pandemic, according to facility officials. The seven-day positivity rate for that region, or for the region that covers East Central Illinois, held at 8.6% Monday, third lowest among the state's 11 regions. Clay has the highest rate of Region 6's 21 counties at 13.3%, Crawford the lowest at 4.7%. In Champaign County, active cases were down by 51 Monday to 605, while recovered cases rose by 89 to 12,892. Champaign 61822 zip code has the county's most active cases with 106. And that information is provided to us by Jeff D'Alessio. The next headline reads, Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Our most popular Instagram photo of 2020 was the result of a spur-of-the-moment decision by one of our most respected writers. Veteran columnist Tom Kacich, K-A-C-I-C-H, was curious how a Black Lives Matter rally would play out June 1st. "I was out on my bike and rode to Urbana to see how many people had showed for the march," he said. "I was impressed by the size of the crowd and took some photos along Main Street and Broadway Avenue, and then realized I could get a better shot of the mass of people from the top of the old railroad overpass." Kacich, our resident historian, figured the purge would lead to a compelling photo. It's the same vantage point that real photographers used about 80 years earlier when they took photos of the old soapbox derbies that were run down Vine Street, sponsored by Sullivan Chevrolet, he said. At newsgazette.com, view the top 10 photos taken in 2020 and the stories behind them at our Instagram account, which is handle news_gazette, which has grown to more than 10,600 followers. Number one, the Black Lives Matter March in Urbana by Tom Kacich. And again, that picture is taken kind of like a God's point of view, bird's eye looking down shot of the march, and people are walking up. Two, remembering Drew Adams with stadium cutouts, family photo. Three, friends create scholarship in memory of Drew Adams, Robin Schultz photo. Four, Salt Fork High senior returns to thank school nurse who saved her, Robin Schultz photo. Five, Ayo Dosunmu withdraws from the NBA draft, Robin Schultz photo. Number six, champagne couple's Christmas decorations are out of this world, Robin Schultz photo. Number seven, thousands march for Black Lives Matter on streets of Champaign, Jim Rosso photo. Eight, unity great on hand to see scoring record broken, also by Robin Schultz photo. Nine, current Illini coach on hand for Lou Henson's 88th birthday party, Jim Rosso photo. And number 10, AD among well-wishers at Shorty Eckelberger's drive, AD among well-wishers at Shorty Eckelberger Day drive-by, Robin Schultz photo. And recreational marijuana goes on sale January 1st, Robin Schultz photo. So you can see some of these photos in this column for today. One of them is University of Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman was among those honoring Shorty Eckelberger on her big day in Champaign. And then there's also a photo, which is our first photo of 2020, So you got to guess on Instagram. And then there's another photo, which I can't quite make out what it is. I think it's a Black Lives Matter March photo. There's a lot of people just kind of walking. So interesting pictures and an interesting look back at the year. The next headline reads, history, area history. In 1920, William Gilliland, the 8-year-old boy from 4 miles south of Bonneville who was accidentally shot by his father, was expected to live, but it was believed that he probably would never see. The child was a patient at the Julia Burnham Hospital. He was shot in a hunting accident. In 1970, bylaws for the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Board were approved. The bylaws outlined the duties and responsibilities of board members. In 2005, Rose Henton had a suggestion for anyone searching for a New Year's resolution: mentor a child with big brothers, big sisters. "It just makes an enormous amount of difference with a child," said Henton, executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Vermilion County. In international history, today's highlight: on December 29, 1890, the Wounded Knee Massacre took place in South Dakota as an estimated 300 Sioux Indians were killed by U.S. troops sent to disarm them. On this date in 1812, going back a little further, during the War of 1812, the American frigate USS Constitution engaged and damaged the British frigate HMS Java off Brazil. In 1845, Texas was admitted as the 28th state. In 1916, James Joyce's first novel, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, was first published in book form in New York after being serialized in London. In 1939, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, starring Charles Laughton and Maureen O'Hara, was released by RKO Radio Pictures. In 1940, during World War II, Germany dropped incendiary bombs on London, setting off what came to be known as the Second Great Fire of London. In 1972, Eastern Airlines Flight 401, a Lockheed L-1011 TriStar, crashed into the Florida Everglades near Miami International Airport, killing 101 of the 176 people aboard. In 1975, a bomb exploded in the main terminal of New York's LaGuardia Airport, killing 11 people. It's never been determined who was responsible. In 1989, dissident and playwright Václav Havel assumed the presidency of Czechoslovakia. In 1992, the United States and Russia announced agreement on a nuclear arms reduction treaty. In 2006, word reached the United States of the execution of former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. Because of the time difference, it was the morning of December 30th in Iraq when the hanging took place. In a statement, President George W. Bush called Saddam's execution an important milestone on Iraq's road to democracy. In 2007, the New England Patriots ended their regular season with a remarkable 16-0 record following a 38-35 comeback victory over the New York Giants. New England became the first NFL team since the 1972 Dolphins to win every game on the schedule. In 2017, Puerto Rican authorities said nearly half of the power customers in the U.S. territory lacked electricity more than 3 months after Hurricane Maria. And 10 years ago, the Obama administration expelled Venezuela's ambassador to the United States a day after Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said he would not allow diplomat Larry Palmer to become the U.S. ambassador to his country. Suicide bombers killed Iraqi police commander Lieutenant Colonel Shamil al-Jabouri, who was renowned in the northern city of Mosul for his relentless pursuit of al-Qaeda. The next headline reads, Delivery, subscriptions, and classifieds. Call 217-351-5266. That's 217-351-5266, or go to newsgazette.com/subscribe. Weekday customer service office hours, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Home delivery deadlines, weekday editions, 7 a.m., weekend editions, 7 a.m., and customer service phones. Weekdays, they are open from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., and weekends from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. The next headline reads, U.S. Congress, new wrinkles. House approves Trump's $2,000 checks for virus relief sending to GOP-led Senate. This article is written by Lisa Mascaro and Jill Colvin, and they work for the Associated Press, and this article is based out of Washington. The House voted overwhelmingly Monday to increase COVID-19 relief checks to $2,000, meeting President Donald Trump's demand for bigger payments and sending the bill to the GOP-controlled Senate, where the outcome is highly uncertain. Democrats led passage 275-134, their majority favoring additional assistance, but dozens of Republicans suddenly joined in approval. While Democrats favored bigger checks, Congress had settled on smaller $600 payments in a compromise over the big year-end relief bill Trump reluctantly signed into law. The president's GOP allies opposed more spending, and Trump's push puts them in a difficult spot. The vote was a stunning turn of events from just a few days ago when House Republicans blocked Trump's demands during a Christmas Eve session. After Trump spent days fuming from his private club in Florida, where he is spending the holidays, dozens of Republicans preferred to link with Democrats rather than buck the outgoing president. Senators were set to return to session Tuesday today, forced to consider the measure amid similar stark GOP divisions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared, "Republicans have a choice. Vote for this legislation or vote to deny the American people the bigger paychecks they need." The showdown could end up as more symbol than substance. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, has declined to say publicly how the Senate will handle the bill when Democrats there try to push it forward for a vote on Tuesday. After the robust House vote, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer warned, "There is no good reason for Senate Republicans to stand in the way." There's a strong support for these $2,000 emergency checks from every corner of the country, Schumer said in a statement. Leader McConnell ought to make sure Senate Republicans do not stand in the way of helping to meet the needs of American workers and families who are crying out for help. The legislative action during the rare holiday week session may do little to change the $2 trillion-plus COVID-19 relief and federal spending package that Trump signed into law Sunday, one of the biggest bills of its kind, providing relief for millions of Americans. That package, $900 billion in COVID-19 aid and $1.4 trillion to fund government agencies, will deliver long-sought cash to businesses and individuals and avert a federal government shutdown that otherwise would have started Tuesday in the midst of the public health crisis. But the outcome will define Trump's GOP, putting a spotlight on the Georgia runoff election January 5th, where two Republican senators are in the fights of their political lives against Democrats in a pair of races that will determine which party controls the Senate next year. Together with votes Monday and Tuesday to override Trump's veto of a sweeping defense bill, it's potentially one last confrontation between the president and the Republican Party he leads as he imposes fresh demands and disputes the results of the presidential election. The new Congress is set to be sworn in on Sunday. Republican Kevin Brady of Texas, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, acknowledged the division and said Congress had already approved ample funds during the COVID-19 crisis. "Nothing in this bill helps anybody get back to work," he said. Aside from the direct $600 checks to most Americans, the COVID-19 portion of the bill revives a weekly pandemic jobless benefit boost, this time $300 through March 14th, as well as a popular paycheck protection program of grants to businesses to keep workers on payrolls. It extends eviction protections, adding a new rental assistance fund. The COVID-19 package draws and expands on an earlier effort from Washington. It offers billions of dollars for vaccine purchases and distribution, for virus contact tracing, public health departments, schools, universities, farmers, food pantry programs, and other institutions and groups facing hardship in the pandemic. Americans earning up to $75,000 will qualify for the direct $600 payments, which are phased out at a higher income level, and there's an additional $600 payment per dependent child. Biden told reporters at an event in Wilmington, Delaware, that he supported the $2,000 checks. Democrats are promising more aid to come once President-elect Joe Biden takes office, but Republicans are signaling a wait-and-see approach. And there's a photograph in this column. It's President Donald Trump looks out of the car as he departs Trump International Golf Club on Monday in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. I'll be back to read Part 2 of the News Gazette very soon, so please stay with me. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.